Hello and welcome to the Chamber Talks Business Podcast. This week we're joined by Shanine from the City of Culture Trust 2021. Shanine is the creative director there and oversees some of the fantastic work City of Culture Trust has been doing. It's been a real fantastic programme in 2021 and we're really excited to explore what they've been up to more in this podcast over the next 45 minutes or so. But today, as my co-host is back, Tom Mongan, President of the Coventry and Warwickshire Chamber of Commerce. Tom, I know you've been up to some exciting things this week. I think you've been visiting some of our influence partners.
Yes, we've had a great week. And can I say, I am so looking forward to today's podcast with Shanine Bathina from the City of Culture. Met Shanine on a number of occasions and have always enjoyed the conversations that we've had. But yes, over at Hariba Miri yesterday, and what an amazing place that is. And it's a right jewel in the crown, and I'm sure going forward we'll be getting Declan, the managing director from Hariba, in as well. So, but today our focus is on Shanine, and I think this is going to be a terrific podcast.
It gives me the great pleasure this morning to welcome Shanine Bathina from the City of Culture Trust here. And I'm really interested in your background, Shanine. What did you get up to in your younger days? Was there anything that really interested you and really took you on that journey to become a creative director for the Coventry City of Culture Trust?
Good morning. Lovely to see you. I suppose I started like ballet lessons when I was about three. And then when I was five, I played the recorder. And when I was seven, I was on the violin. And, you know, at the age of 11, I was the lead role in the school play. And, you know, through my life, I think I've always had an appetite to take part. And I've been very lucky that in my education, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, arts was a big part of the curricula, and we got so many opportunities to participate, learn instruments, sing, dance, all those things. And so that's a real feature of my life. You know, I used to stand in the playground when I was about 10 and sing ABBA songs with my mates and pretend I was Agnetha from ABBA. And I went to a choir kind of summer school in Berkshire because I grew up in Newbury. So I was always very actively involved, and that carried on through secondary school where I played the tuba, I sang in the choir, learned the guitar, and that kind of carried on through. And then when I went to sixth form, I became head of the house in the sixth form, and that involved directing the house choir and the house play. And alongside all of that, I was very sporty. So when I was at primary school, I was like captain of the netball team. And when I was at secondary school, I did 200 metre running. I was in the athletics team. I played tennis, swam, all those kind of things. And so I've always been someone who's enjoyed taking part. And I think by taking part in arts and sport, you learn so many skills that are transferable for your life. It's not necessarily about becoming an actor or a dancer or a singer. It's about the way in which that creativity informs your approach to life and helps you think differently about the challenges that you might come across as you go through life. And also leadership skills, because when you're working in teams, whether it's an orchestra or whether it's an athletics team or whether it's a netball team, you know, you're learning to be in a team. You're understanding the how to work together, to embrace different people's skills and strengths. And it's a really important life lesson for kids, I think. So for me, I had all of that. I was very, very lucky. And my parents were great because my dad loves musicals. And my dad originally is from Karachi in Pakistan. He's Pakistani. And he came here when he was like 19, he moved to London and, you know, wanted to just live here and absorb it all. And he loved musicals. So every time, you know, there was a new musical opening in London, we would travel from Newbury as a family to go and see the musical. So I was very lucky that I had all of that. And we weren't a rich family, you know, but we kind of prioritised that. We prioritised art and culture as something that, you know, we loved as a family. You know, we sang songs together when we were on holiday in the car and, you know, all that stuff, you know. So I think that's what kind of characterises, I suppose, my upbringing, really.
I in previous conversations I've had with you, and I forget how talented you are, and if I'd have remembered, we could have had a bit of a jam session. as I was a vocalist, I think I was telling you in a band and whatever, so...
What was the name of your band, Tom?
Captain Morgan Band. I played in a few, but with the family, because I had a brother, two brothers in the band as well, which I think, going over older ground, I think I may have mentioned it in a previous podcast, but plugging it away. but yeah, I was lead vocalist and play guitar quite badly, so not as talented as you, Shanine, I have to say.
I have to just say that I was never a great instrumentalist. I just loved taking part. I was never going to be a professional musician. I loved singing though, and the band I was in was called Remember Emily, which was named after Emily Pankhurst from the Suffragette movement.
Okay.
And my dad referred to the music as cemetery music because it was kind of created in the early 80s and it was very electronic. But I loved it. I just loved being in a band and being the lead vocalist.
Did you write your own stuff or was you covers?
Actually, it was written... We had a band leader and his name was Barry King. And actually, he worked in the... we had a department store in Newbury called Camp Hobson's. And there was a cemetery. You know, the people that organise funerals at the back of Camp Hobson's, and he worked for them. So in his spare time, he wrote music, and he just loved music, and so I was his lead vocalist, so he wrote all the music.
Is there anywhere we could find some of these
tracks? No, I don't think so. I don't think so, Sean. You know, I think there is a cassette tucked away in my loft somewhere. Probably not something to dig out.
Is there any chance Remembering Emily is going to come back for the City of Culture 2021? Is that going to be the grand finale?
Well, I can't tell you.
And Captain Morgan's a support band. I like it. Have you been sponsored by any famous rum brands?
It's every band or whatever has a story how... And we were getting gigs before we even had a name. So we had a manager who was going out promoting us, and all of a sudden we had these in rehearsals, and he was saying, right, you know, boys, we've got this gig coming up in 2 weeks and we need a name. So it's picking a name, and it was really harder than... And we were in this upstairs in a pub, and they had obviously the top shelf, and somebody said Captain Morgan. It was better than Bells or Bacardi or something like that. So
Southern Comfort.
Well, Southern Comfort, I think there was a band already going out doing Southern Comfort. But yeah, another good. So Captain Morgan came to. And that's how it stuck.
You spoke about sort of the opportunities that come your way when you just get involved by being in the orchestra or being in school teams. Do you think that has a part to play now in your sort of later career about just being involved and actually the opportunities that can come forward from just getting out there and doing things?
I think so. I mean, I think we have one life, right? And there are so many opportunities out there, and it would be sad not to take part in some of them. And, you know, obviously some people do more than others and are able to do more than others. But I suppose when we have a City of Culture, for me it was about, you know, re-engaging people with their creativity, whether that's sewing or singing or whatever it might be. And you know, we're all creative, we're born creative, and at some point in our lives, it kind of gets knocked out of some people. I don't know, they get focused on work or family or whatever and they forget about it. But it's all there in us, and it's about how you pull it out and engage people. And whether that's about being an audience member and just loving listening and watching, going to festivals, listening to the radio, whatever it might be, or whether it's about participating. And that's what City of Culture needs to be about, and re-engaging everyone with their creativity. And we're working with this organisation called 64 Million Artists, and that they named their organisation after the population of the England and the UK, because they were like, you know, everyone is an artist, everyone is creative, we all have it in us. We don't have to do it as a profession, but we all have that innate creativity, and I think that's for me. And I think being in bands and choirs and school teams, is about working with people, because that's where you get your energy, that's where you get your ideas, that's where magic happens, when people come together and try and think about, you know, great projects together.
Yeah, I would second that for sure, and I think playing in a band will also give you confidence.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing like getting out and looking out at a few hundred people or a few thousand people. I've got no idea what sort of people, you know, the amount of people that used to come to your gigs. The biggest gig we did was 2,000 people, which is quite a sizable crowd.
Yeah, yeah.
And the smallest one, I think, was about 10, and they came with us. So, you know, there was it was a huge sort of, but it gives you the confidence to go out there and be you, and as you say, you get that creative juices flowing.
It's also, I agree with that, and I think it's also about finding your own identity, and creative activities allow you to understand who you are and kind of what makes you tick. And you know, when we get up in the morning, we don't always jump out of bed and think, oh, I must go to work, it's going to be a great day. But actually knowing that, you know, you can get up, you can go to work, but there's all these other things that are going to be going on around you and filling out your day or your weekends or your evenings. That's what gives you that kind of zest for life, I think. And for me, it's about, you know, it gives you that positive energy. It's and it's been wonderful to see that in Coventry, because I think when I arrived in Coventry back in 2018 to take on the leadership of the programme for City of Culture, a lot of people didn't really understand what a City of Culture was and what it could be. And I think there were some people who had they felt they had an understanding of it, and therefore it wasn't going to be for them. And my thing was always like, this is for all of us to decide what this is and do it together. So whatever your thing is, whether it's cooking or praying or dancing or painting, whatever it is, let's think about how we create this program together and find ways to celebrate creativity in the city.
Well, creativity allows you also to reinvent yourself, to become somebody new you didn't know was there. I like to write stories and things, and it just allows you that whole new lease of life and go into that imagination and really explore something you didn't know was within you. Do you think that's an important message for Coventry? Do you think that's something that the UK City of Culture actually achieves by allowing cities to reinvent themselves?
I think so. You know, we always said that the reason the city bid to be City of Culture was for the people and to kind of celebrate community, as well as to look at, you know, how we work towards our future together and how we make that change happen together. And I think creativity has to be part of that conversation. It can't be something that sits to one side. It's inherent in all of us. And you know, if you're thinking about the future, you need ideas, and you need to exercise your imagination, and you need to think differently and embrace new opportunities. And that's where creativity really comes into the fore. I remember there was a great TED talk, which was the title was Why Dance is More Important Than Maths on the school curriculum. And it wasn't saying that dance was more important than maths, but it was saying that everyone is different and everyone has skills and abilities, and they find their way through different mediums. And some people will be brilliant at numbers, and some people will be brilliant at dancing and moving. And that we need to embrace those differences, and I think that's what creativity allows for people to find their way through life in different ways. I think, you know, storytelling and art, it's about observation. It's understanding our life, our cities, our places, and thinking about them in different ways, or seeing them in different ways. I mean, we did a big light festival when I was in London, and why the festival was great, but actually what it did is it allowed you to look at the place around you really differently, to observe the architecture, the history, the heritage, the little stories that are in these buildings that the architects and the designers have added in, and to come together in public space and to kind of feel a shared ownership of it in a different way. It really kind of allows you to engage in so many different ways, creativity, I think.
And it's clear that creativity is entwined into everything. So talking there, architecture, building, storytelling, business. You have to have that sort of creative arm to be able to keep ideas fresh, to keep things moving forward. Innovations based on creativity. How do you keep ideas fresh as a leader within Coventry and Warwickshire? How do you keep things completely fresh and doing things new all the time, challenging yourself and those around you?
I think it's about the interaction with people. I mean, for me, the more people I'm meeting, the more my kind of creative juices are going, because I'm kind of inspired by what other people are doing. And because, you know, I believe in art and culture. I believe inherently that we should have an arts and cultural life, that it's not a nice to have, it's a must have. You know, and there's a lot of discussion in the arts sector about a national arts service in the way that you have a national health service, because actually, you know, look at COVID in this period, people have reached out for creativity, for craft, for music, for storytelling, podcasts and filmmaking, and, you know, that they wanted to use their kind of creative juices to understand the challenging times that we're currently living in, and thinking about how we connect with people differently in this time, because we've had to change our whole way of being, haven't we? And I think we've seen creativity come into that.
I personally am totally interested in, you've mentioned COVID, and obviously from the onset, from the initial planning, it wasn't even heard of. So how did you get over that scenario where here you are planning a major, major event, the biggest thing that will have hit Coventry and Warwickshire forever, and all of a sudden you're hit with this brick wall? How did you cope with that?
It was challenging. but I think, you know, as creative people, as creative leaders, you know, we're used to challenges. You know, we're used to making things happen in difficult circumstances. And I think we probably didn't realise how long COVID, and it, obviously it's still with us now, how long it was going to be. And maybe that was a good thing, because it meant that we were having to think about it, but also still committed to delivering this programme. So, you know, we spent a lot of time doing scenario planning, thinking about dates, working with the city and the Department for Culture, Digital Culture, Media, Sport, who own the City of Culture programme. But it was hard. Like, and I think our immediate response once we went into lockdown was, we need to reach out to the arts sector and we need to support people because they've lost all their livelihood. You know, the sector is built on freelance. It's a freelance economy. The schools shut down. A lot of artists work in schools. Festivals stopped. Venues closed. The way in which these artists and creative communities make their money, everything just stopped. And so our immediate response was, how do we reach out and help people and just put some money in their hands so they can pay their bills and not be worrying? And also, we're a city of culture. How do we continue to work with them in this time, and what does that look like? So I think it was less about us and more a concern about, you know, how we continue the journey together and how we support those, that sector around us. And but it was challenging. You know, in March 2020 we were just about to announce our whole programme for 2021, and of course we just had to put that on hold, and we had to revisit the whole programme. And I think also there are so many ways in which COVID has impacted. It's impacted all of the partners that we work with. You know, for example, all the funders that we were talking to for funding, they just all shut their doors for the best part of a year, really. So in terms of, you know, building a funding profile for the business so that we can actually deliver the activity and the ambition was challenging. Luckily, we had great support from businesses in Coventry and Warwickshire, and which gave us a great foundation. But yeah, I think it was kind of, I suppose, creatively reimagining how we deliver a programme, how we work with people, and flexing that creative muscle, really. You know, even with the opening event, we went through 7 iterations of what that could be, because we had to create this big opening moment without the ability to promote it to a live audience, because we were in COVID and people weren't allowed to gather. And you remember back to that time, and, you know, we had a real steer from the partners in the city, you know, licensing, planning, etc., that you know, they didn't want to see any gatherings, and so it's like, how do we create this moment that gives people the sense that something exciting is happening without having, you know, 100,000 people on the streets? So it was challenging, but I think we've just had to find new ways of doing it. And I think the relationship with broadcast has been so interesting because we've really evolved that, and it's really helped us to extend our reach, not just through social media, but through TV, radio, all of the filmmaking we've been doing through our YouTube channel. And it's allowed us to think and work quite differently, I think.
I remember you coming into the Chamber of Commerce and the Board of Directors meeting really early doors to explain your vision and what was going to happen. And I was thinking, wow, you know, this is going to be brilliant for the city. And all of a sudden, as I say, right at the launch, we were hit with these. Yeah. And I just thought, the impact and how you guys come through that was astounding. I've got to say, I have to take my hat off to you. And as a Coventry born and bred kid, I think the transformation within the city has been brilliant for businesses, and for the general population as well. So, you know, does that give you, you know, some pleasure in
yeah, I mean, this is why we're doing it. We're doing it for transformation. We're doing it to be looking forwards and looking at how art and culture drives and motivates a city and develops its future and its growth opportunities. And, you know, just, I think what we've had to, or we decided we wanted, I suppose, was to continue to be ambitious, to continue to have an appetite for risk. And luckily, we've got a board of trustees who've really supported that. We've got a city council who wanted this to be the best it could be, and so supporting us to continue to be ambitious, take risks. You know, we could have opened the Assembly Festival Garden and gone back into lockdown and spent a huge amount of money doing that and then had no audiences. But actually, and when we opened, we still had social distancing and mask wearing and, you know, you had to ventilate and all that kind of thing. But actually, during that summer, luckily, you know, we were able to get more people through the door, sell more tickets, and, you know, built that appetite with audiences. But we could have just decided not to do that because it would have been too difficult and too expensive and too risky. And I just think in these times, this isn't a time to be conservative with a small c. This is a time to take risk, to be ambitious, to try new things. And I think I've seen it so many times before that when there are difficulties or challenges, people play safe. And I've never been that person. I feel like, you know, you shouldn't be doing that. Like, this is the time when you don't play safe, that you actually do take some risks and try different things. And I think that the general public go with that. They want that. You know, they want to feel safe and protected, and they want to know that you've put everything in place that needs to be there. But they also want to live a life and have a great time. And so you've got to kind of balance that, really. And it's probably the same with business, how you balance, you know, being ambitious, not being too risk averse, but also being realistic and mindful of, you know, the impact of decision making, isn't it, really?
And it does cross, for sure, you know, certainly within business. And as this goes out, business people will be interested. You're obviously very successful in what you've done and created here. But absolutely, it's do you take that risk? You have to invest or you stand still, and then the competition then comes in and takes over and you lose ground. So it's how you're promoting yourself, where you're promoting yourself, what do you say, and as you said, Whitney, what you invest in. So yeah, crucial.
And sometimes you've just got to go with your gut. Like, you go with your gut feeling. Like, sometimes you just know it's the right thing and you can't really explain it, and there may not even be an evidence base, but you just know it's going to be the right thing. Obviously there's an element that could go wrong, but you do the right thing, you plan it carefully and properly, and it can work so well. And then sometimes your gut feeling is it's too much risk, it's a bit too ambitious, we're not sure. So I think you just have to go with that a bit and trust your instinct. which is a business?
Gut feeling. I'm 100% with gut feelings, you know. It's like meeting people, I guess, as well. Mm-hmm. You know, you get a gut feeling about them.
Yeah.
And quite often your initial feeling is probably pretty much, as the time rolls on and you get to know them a bit more or whatever, your initial feelings are probably pretty much in tune with what you're going to think, you know, towards the end of it anyway. But yeah, absolutely.
Hi, I'm Lee from City Fibre. I'm the Regional Partnership Director for the Midlands. We build full fibre networks and we've covered about 70% of Coventry so far, with the main build was due to finish in 2023, is likely to finish round about the middle of 2022. It's a great job, great area to be working in, and we really value our chamber membership because we get to meet lots of fascinating people, we get introductions where we need them, and also we get to come to some fabulous events. I strongly recommend it.
How do you use your leadership skills to really set that direction of a whole trust, a whole company that's set to deliver such an exciting programme for a city? How do you use them skills?
Good question. I think, I mean, obviously, it's not just me. I mean, Martin Sutherland's our chief exec, and he was very central to how we set up and plan the trust. I think for me, I was really... I would say that I kind of have been a bit of an architect of the kind of creative element of the trust. So really thinking about how we wanted to create our program, the approach we wanted to take, the process. And I quickly kind of got this vibe from the city that, you know, we really wanted to be on the ground working with people in communities. I started talking to quite a lot of charities working in the third sector, and some great work going in grassroots communities with people, you know, living with mental health or with homelessness, or young people kind of being exploited or at risk of exploitation, and, you know, lots of new communities arriving in the city, and just starting to think about all of that. And then also all the innovation and the kind of future planning around green futures and digital futures and innovation. And so starting to kind of absorb all of this and then think about, you know, how do we structure this? And I was really also kind of thinking that, you know, Coventry has been this place that's continually been moving, on the move, moving forwards, moving people, changing, growing, responding, rising up against, you know, in difficult times and challenging times. And so I was really interested in that whole sense of movement as well. And our logo, big kind of mantra is Coventry Moves. So yeah, really thinking about what that looks and feels like, really. And so we, within our team, you know, in terms of the architecture of it, I suppose for me it was bringing in a kind of a global understanding of what's happening around the world. So, you know, there's a whole kind of collaborative cities movement that's happening in America, North America, which is really about how people are coming together to co-create services, policy, thinking about their communities and what the role of citizens in all that. There's a whole caring cities movement in South Africa, which is really about understanding the vulnerabilities, the differences, and new ways of people living together in communities and understanding, you know, the challenges that other people face and how you build that into the planning for cities. And then the whole kind of dynamic cities model, which is a kind of a European thing, I suppose, which is around smart cities and that kind of forward-facing piece as well. So that formed the structure, really. Those three movements, those kind of global movements, formed the structure of our team. So I could clearly see that this way we could actually do the work, have the approach, reach into those different communities, but then kind of how you bring it together in a beautiful tapestry. So that's really my thing, was to kind of think strategically, think globally, but look at how we do that locally, and be inspired by that, really.
I think you also, you had the foresight to use the Chamber of Commerce, for example.
Absolutely.
You know, in how to get out there and the support,
yeah.
You know, I obviously the Chamber of Commerce is an ideal partner in helping promote promote that as well. So,
and I would say that there's something really interesting about collective power. And I think this comes back to the kind of co-creation model and how across different sectors of the community, we can come together to find solutions. And I think that's what we've started to see working with our 2021 Business Club, with the LEP, with the Chamber, but also with our third sector, with our cultural sector, with the education sector. Like how we come together to really find the solutions and to understand the challenges in our communities and not feel like it always has to be the local authority that has to do that, but actually we're all citizens of this place, we're all people that work in this place. So how do we use the resources and the knowledge and the skills that we all have to support each other and to make the lives of people in the city better? And that's what I start to see from a City of Culture movement, that going forward, the biggest legacy is the legacy of partnership and the way that everyone has come together around City of Culture and kind of what that's going to look like going forward. Because I know from when we worked on London 2012, like after we delivered London 2012, like you can't go backwards. You can't go back to what it was like before. You have to move forwards. And everybody wanted to do more, get more involved, be more ambitious, new projects, new ideas. And I think that will happen in Coventry as well, because it is happening really, that people have got excited about that kind of the power of collaboration and where that can take you. And collaborating cross-sector is so interesting because, you know, you're looking at the world through different lenses and it impacts the way that you think about forward planning and your people, you know.
One of the skills that stands out for me that you have is that ability to adapt, that ability to hear something as damning as Boris Johnson saying we're going into a full lockdown, but to adapt so fast to that. How do you set the direction in a business when that happens, when something you're not expecting comes along and hits you full on? How do you adapt so quickly? Is it communication with your team? Is it that strategic leadership you were talking about? Or is it all of those skills tied together?
I think it's about inner resilience, isn't it, really? And a complete commitment to the objectives that you set for yourself. And
sleepless nights.
Lots of sleepless nights, lots of long hours, lots of worrying about, you know, how you do things. But I think, in a way, I've always seen challenges as opportunities. I'm very glass half full, I suppose. So I'm actually inspired by challenges, weirdly, I'm not saying that I would ever want to have a COVID challenge again, but there's something interesting in the journey that it takes you on, because you have to respond and be flexible and creative around it. And, you know, as I said earlier, you know, the whole way in which we've worked with broadcast media, that may not have happened if we hadn't had COVID. So that's been an amazing part of our programme, really. And there's lots of other ways in which we've worked that maybe we wouldn't have worked that way without this. So whilst there's a lot of stuff we haven't been able to do, or lots of things that we've missed, like with our team, like working in isolation, people working in their bedrooms or their kitchens, trying to create a major event like this when everyone is working remotely is so difficult, because these things are hard work. And what makes it kind of palatable, if you like, is the sense of community and the sense of, you know, shared vision and the way in which you, you know, chat to each other, learn from each other. And, you know, that's part of the experience of delivering these events, really. But I think for us, it's been about just keeping people together. Like, you know, I suppose it's kind of being very clear, having a very clear vision. And I think we recruited people around the vision, and everyone was mission driven. Like they really believed in the vision and continue to believe in the vision of the organisation and of the programme. And that's what's driven people, I think. And I think if we hadn't had that strong vision, maybe it might have been harder.
The COVID impaired or improved the whole experience for you?
I just think, I can't say it's impaired or improved. I think it's just different. I think it's just a different way of delivering a programme. I mean, just looking at the opening event we talked about earlier, you know, we were going in a direction of what we thought an opening event should be. Actually, we had to do it differently, and it was wonderful. It was different, and it may not be what we would have done, but it was a wonderful day, and actually, we created something for our time, which probably will never be seen again because we won't be in that time again. And so it was quite unique and very distinctive, and everyone worked really hard to think creatively about the issues and challenges we had and to find those creative solutions so that people had that sense of something exciting happening. So it's hard to say it's impaired it or made it better, but I just think it's different and just as good and just as ambitious. And, you know, and as I said before, I feel like we've continued to push ourselves and stretch ourselves, and it's meant we've had to do it a bit more maybe and differently. Yeah.
I think, as I say, from Coventry Kids' perspective, and it was a concrete jungle country,
yeah.
Very grey, and okay, at the time in the 60s, when, you know, they got the pedestrianised city centre, all encompassed in this huge ring road, and then I think you guys have turned it into a bit of an oasis now, where it's actually quite pleasant to walk through the city centre.
Yeah. I mean, the city council have led all the kind of regeneration of the public realm, but I think probably what you now see is not just a really inviting, green, healthy kind of public space in the city centre, but I think the quality of the materials helps with that, as well as the landscaping and the vision they had for what they wanted to achieve. And from our perspective, we've been able to work with them, because one of the things I always said is that, you know, I want to put a creative signature through the city. And so when people arrive in the city, they need to be able to have an experience, you know, as well as going to a fest or an event, they need to be able to feel the creativity coming from the city. So being able to walk through the public realm and have interventions like Morag Myerskoff's incredible artwork on Hartford Street, or Studio Morrison created that new playground in the Bull Yard, and, you know, the City Council wanted a children's playground there, and so we were saying, well, why don't you work with an artist on it, so it's a bit of public art as well as being a children's playground, and it's something people in years to come will come and see, as well as families bringing their children to play there. So it's always about what is the role of artists, what can the role of culture be in reimagining a place. And the work we've done with the Business Improvement District, you know, the Show Windows programme, you know, getting art into windows all over the city centre, working with local artists, regional artists, international artists. We just launched a programme this week where we've been working with young people in the city, and they went down to the British Museum in London, and they were given access to the collection, the British Museum collection, and they've curated windows and they've brought some of that collection to the city. So it's just kind of all the time kind of thinking about how culture can make our place this thriving, exciting place, give it a bit of a buzz, and particularly in this time when we want people to come back and enjoy the offer of the city centre. And so I think for me it's always about how we drive that and the role of artists across all aspects to do that, really.
Well, City of Culture will eventually come to an end, so how do we retain that celebration, retain that creativity in a legacy? What sort of work's happening behind the scenes to ensure that Coventry stays creative, stays this buzzing place to be?
I mean, there's a great creative sector here, and they've all gone on a journey. So there'll be a sense of continuation through the work that they do, and, you know, the work of the Belgrade. One of the things we've done with the Belgrade Theatre is we worked very closely with them to look at kind of changing the leadership model. So there's now a new team in there, and they're very committed to some of the ways in which we've been working and really reimagining the work of the theatre. And so I think there's a sector there that will take it forward. We're also doing some work where we're looking at the programme that we've developed and delivered with our partners over the last few years, and, you know, where there's appetite for things to continue. So whether it's the Festival Garden or the Ice Rink or other projects like the Reggae Carnival, you know, where we've worked with communities to create events and just to think about, you know, how we support those events to continue, not necessarily by us delivering them or even giving money to them, but just supporting them to think about how they go forward in the future and where those partnerships are, so that we can facilitate that. And then also as a trust, just thinking about kind of what our role is beyond May 2022. So obviously our programme ends in 2022, and we're now looking at a bit of a transition period where, you know, once we've delivered our programme and the busyness of our team has stopped, actually to then have a bit of a transition period where we kind of hand back and we kind of leave really strong partnerships in place, you know, go back to the BBC and the British Council and all of the great partners we've worked with, as well as businesses and the city, and just think about, you know, in that transition time, like, what is it going forward? How do we continue the momentum and the energy? And so that's what we're looking at the moment in terms of the legacy of our programme. But I think the way that we embedded legacy from the beginning in the way that we've worked, you know, with businesses and partners in the city being absolutely central to everything we do. So, yeah.
Hi, I'm Adam Dent from Advent Communications. We're part of the PLMR Group, which is a top 100 media and communications firm. Our office in the Midlands is based in Coventry. We also have one in Birmingham. We handle all sorts of PR, communications, social media, new media, website design, podcasts, videos. We've worked for the Chamber for 2 decades now, making sure that it's the premier voice in business across Coventry and Warwickshire. We're also members and get absolute full value from our membership. We've met a lot of clients through there, we've got a lot of networking, a lot of influencing. Really, we find it's the number one organisation to be a member of, and we're proud to work for so many of their members.
Shanine, this is the part of the podcast where we move into some quick fire questions just to get to know you a bit better.
Okay.
And I'm really interested in, is there any skills that you would really like to master that you haven't already mastered?
Oh my goodness, a skill. That's a really difficult question. I would love to have been able to write music. That's something I would love to have done. So I think that would be the skill. That would be the skill that I would love to have mastered. I can read music and I can play music, but I've never been able to write it.
What has been your favourite moment in the City of Culture so far?
It's very hard to answer because we've had such an amazing journey, but I would say probably getting to the opening event on the 5th of June 2021 and delivering something so special and powerful in such restricted circumstances will always be with me, because it was such a big team effort and it was wonderful. So I think that's going to always be with me, but the whole programme is special.
In your journey to becoming a leader, who's been your greatest mentor who you've learnt the most from?
I think I have to say it's going to be my mum and dad, because they brought me up. And my dad was an accountant and he had me writing a business plan at the age of 12 in order to get my, you know, allowance, my pocket money. And my mum was a nurse, worked in the NHS all her life, and a very committed, you know, advocate for the National Health Service. And they taught me so much. You know, they're the foundation on which my life was built, really. They gave me the access to the arts and cultural sector, and they supported me, they believed in me, they supported me to have a confident, wonderful life. So I think I have to say them.
So I think it comes across quite clearly you have a love and a passion for music as well. So the best concert you've ever been to?
Oh God. Well, it's very hard to say one thing, isn't it? On my 21st birthday, my mum and dad surprised me and took me to see Ella Fitzgerald at the Royal Albert Hall. And that will always live with me. It was a wonderful, wonderful event. But also, I go to Glastonbury every year. My partner works there. And we've had some wonderful moments, but particularly on the Sunday afternoon on the Pyramid Stage, where they have kind of... you know, it's kind of the kind of golden oldies, if you like.
And the legends.
The legends. Mm. And I've seen some amazing artists there. I mean, Dolly Parton on that stage was absolutely extraordinary. And Barry Gibb a few years ago. I mean, I was crying. It was so powerful. And also Nile Rodgers came on after Barry Gibb, and that was an amazing concert as well. So I've had so many amazing times there. And I love Craig Charles at Shangri-La. He like spins a mean tune, and it's so soulful. And, you know, so it's very hard to say one thing, but there's a bit of a selection there for you.
Nile Rodgers and Sheep were absolutely awesome.
He's a legend, and like the first time he did Glastonbury and he played Madonna and Duran Duran and all this music that he'd been involved in producing, Michael Jackson and just all this stuff. Oh my God, this man is a legend. Like, he's just done everything, everything through the 80s, which was when I was really listening to music as a teenager. Like, he had a hand in, really. So he's, yeah, very special.
Shanine, that brings us to the final question of this podcast. You've clearly had a really successful career, and if you could go back and just give one piece of advice to your younger self for you to go on that journey, what piece of advice would you give yourself?
Ooh, very good question. I think for me it was always about following what I enjoyed, what I loved. And I remember having a bit of a battle with my mum and dad at one point because they didn't want me to do theatre studies I can't remember if it was for O levels or A levels. And I was like, yeah, but I really want to do it. Like, I really enjoy it. And actually, whether you work in that sector or not, you have to do the things you enjoy. That's where your passion will come from. And actually, these are transferable skills that you take with you. So I think just follow your passion, follow your heart. And allow yourself to just grow and enjoy all the amazing kind of cultural, artistic creativity all around you. Get involved and participate. And yeah, that's what I would say. And that's what I think my mum and dad always, you know, they encouraged me to go in the direction I wanted to go in. Generally, there were a few little moments, but, you know, generally it was like, you know, whatever you want to do, you should do, and don't feel like you have to do. You don't have to become an accountant or a solicitor or a doctor. That there are these other opportunities in life. So.
Shanine, that was such an insightful time on the Chamber Talks Business Podcast. I'd like to thank you from the Chamber, but also from our members for giving us such insight into what the City of Culture has been doing over this fantastic year for Coventry and Warwickshire.
Thanks, Shanine. I knew I was going to enjoy it.
And thank you. We've had such incredible support from businesses in Coventry and Warwickshire through the LEP, through the Business Improvement District, and through our close working relationship with the Chamber. And, you know, these things don't happen without these solid partnerships. So just thank you to everyone in the region, and I hope you enjoy the next 6 months.
And thank you to you for listening to the Chamber Talks Business Podcast. We very much look forward to you joining us with our next guest in a couple of weeks' time. Thank you. Well, thank you very much for listening to the Chamber Talks Business Podcast. This podcast has been designed to get to know our region's business leaders. And if you have any questions you would like to ask of our upcoming speakers, then please do get in touch with your account representative here at the Coventry and Warwickshire Chamber of Commerce. If you have enjoyed the podcast, then please do subscribe. And if you could leave us a rating and a review, that would help other people to find us. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope to see you on the next edition of the Chamber Talks Business Podcast.